What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Garland and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Ben, and you know what's great about today?
Literally everything!
Literally everything, Ben, because whilst while we are recording this, you know, here in the present in Roanoke, whilst you, listener, are listening to this, if you're listening to this, at, you know, like in the afternoon on the day it came out, which is probably, then me and Ben are on a plane ride right now to Orlando, Florida, where we are going to Disney World!
I know, it's very exciting.
Yes, it is very exciting, Ben.
I am ready and super psyched.
I am so ready.
It's going to be so much fun. Mm-hmm. Merry times ahead, no doubt.
The merriest.
Is there anything in particular that you're doing different about this trip than you've done for every other trip that we've done to Disney? Which I am very grateful has been a plenty.
A right many times.
Yes.
A right more times than I ever expected.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Let's see. So the obvious big difference is this is the first time we are bringing all three children with us to the Disney World.
Yes.
Well, in a sense. Beth was pregnant with them during your wedding.
Hey!
So in a sense, they've all existed down there. But this time
it will be different.
This time it will be extremely different as Nick and Nate will have left the womb.
Right. The view, much better.
The view is way better. Beth will not need like a scooter or anything. So yeah, they are going to get to experience it in all of its glory for the first time. I am I don't know exactly how that's going to go. You know, I feel like there's bound to be some breakdowns. There's bound to be some crying. There's bound to be some, like, fear about some, like, rides or shows or characters and stuff like that. I'm just sort of, like, trying to mentally prepare myself for all those things. Like, because, like, on the one hand, like, I know sometimes, like, you know, kids will just get scared of stuff. And I'm not typically in the nature of, like, you know, no, you must do it or anything like that.
Right.
But at the same time, there's this like there often, you know, you'll have stood in line for a long time for a thing. And also like, I know you're afraid, but actually it's going to be great. And I just, you know, we got to, I feel like I know better than you in this situation.
Right.
And
it's an incredibly fine line to walk because you never want to be like pressing anybody beyond their right. fears. But then there's also like, I remember it from the first ever Spartan race that we did. As like a fun thing that we have done in the past as part of like this community of people that we have online is that we were all in Washington, D.C. We all signed up for the Spartan race. And I think that there was like approximately 30 to 35 people.
Big group.
All of whom were wearing like these like Super Carlin Spartan
singlets.
And we were like all matching and it was so much fun. And it was really cool to me because I felt like I was able to help encourage people who maybe otherwise wouldn't have like ever sought out such an endeavor, such an experience, such like a crucible of outdoor mud obstacles, you know, walls, climbing, all of the rest. And so it was like a really, really, really cool feeling to have like helped contribute to people finding themselves in this particular situation. But then at the same time, like whilst you're out there, it's like we go very slow. We just try to make sure that everybody is like accounted for. Everybody is like, you know, feeling good.
Everyone's together.
Right. About all the things. And, you know, so like through the process, you know, like you and I and we had a couple of other people out there, like our trainer Gabriel, who we talk about a lot, who was helping out like on the course and stuff. And it was like one of these things where you're kind of going through and like having these like amazing moments with each of the people who's there as like they're overcoming like a piece of their own like worry or fear or like even just being proud of themselves for doing something.
Yeah.
And I remember there was this one moment where me and this woman were like at this barrier where you're inside of a mud pit. So we're standing like, you know, up to our like, you know, chest in muddy water.
Yeah.
And the obstacle is this like inflatable barrier that basically goes like maybe like 6 inches below the water. So like you have to go underwater.
Right.
In order to surpass the obstacle. Now, like to be fair, you can like get out of the mud pit and walk around the whole thing.
Right. Yeah.
That is an option. But she was determined and you know, it was like this thing where like I could tell like the fear in her was like standing in the way of her absolute desire to do it. And it was like one of these things where it's like it's like, you know, I'm sitting there and like, I want to be encouraging, you know, but at the same rate, like, I don't want someone to feel like forced. So you're like, you're trying to like walk this exact line that you're right. talking about with the rides at Disney, where it's like, I like, I know you can do this. I am right here. I will not let anything bad happen to you. I promise.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, up to you, we can do this or we can walk around. And so like, you know, after probably, I mean, you know, of course, in the moment, I'm sure it felt like more time, but like yeah. a minute of like contemplation or something like that. It was like, okay, takes a deep breath. She shoots underwater, comes out the other side. And it was the most miraculous change in like demeanor and confidence that I have ever witnessed happen mm-hmm. in my entire life.
It's like you witnessed like a literal baptism in the middle of the Spartan race yes, or something. Yeah.
Yes. Like, you know, it was one of these things where I think that like, it's a barrier that had to be knocked down and it was like,
I've gone under.
Oh, hey, yeah, yeah. good save. Good save. So it's this barrier that had to be gone under that like immediately just like transformed everything. And it was so like, I mean, like she came out of the water and was like, yeah, like, you know, it was contagious. And the whole entire experience, the whole trip was worth it for that moment, you know, in time.
Yeah.
But it was like a situation where somebody had to like want to overcome their fears
yeah.
and, you know, to be like placed in the situation to overcome their fear and everything. And so, yeah, now like as parents, as we start to like take our kids to these like next stages of life where there is a considerable amount of like worry about the unknown.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause it's like anything, like a lot of times growing up, I remember, I think we talked about Busch Gardens possibly on After the Final Pop last week. It's
yeah.
It's an amusement park here in the state of Virginia. You had gone as a child prior to me with like your older friends, and you're not like a lot older than me. We're like 2 years apart.
Yeah.
So like, you know, it's conceivable that I could have just gone on the first trip, gone through all the first experiences with you. Like, it wasn't like I was so far behind. But then, like, I had all the stories about, like, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, which is, like, it's one of their signature roller coasters, or the Alpengeist yeah. and stuff like that. And I had this, like, pre-built worry.
Right.
Like, on the basis of, like, what you had already told me to expect right. about this particular thing. And I remember, you know, I was petrified. It's like, this is something like the older kids do, not something I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I remember doing Loch Ness Monster and I was like, can we do that again?
Yes. Yeah. Like, that was the Loch Ness Monster at Busch Gardens in like Williamsburg was my first roller coaster ever. Yeah. I think we talked about this last week not in the main episode. So I'll retell it a little bit here.
There you go. Yeah. I think that's okay.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, like my buddy who had invited me on the trip, he had been even before me. And so he'd already gone on and he's like so excited. And he's like, oh man, there's like all these loops. And like, if you haven't seen it, like the two loops, like, do they intersect? Did they go between each other?
Like,
I don't even know. Like
this.
Like one. Yeah. Like
if
that.
You were to like make a circle with your index yeah. finger and your thumb. And
yeah.
Then like,
no, I don't think they do that.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think
they
do
that. No, I don't
either.
Think they do either. Anyway.
That would seem awfully advanced. For
it would. But anyway, I remember, yeah, we're in line for it. It's like, you know, we've gotten there. It's less than an hour into the park. And it's like, oh man, we're here. And it's like, I remember being in line, being like so excited. And then it's like, you get closer and closer. And you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Feeling that, like, I don't know what's going to happen. This is going to go really fast. And it's like, roller coasters are such an, and it's like, they're so interesting in design. It's like they're the perfect like melding of like, the point of them is to be fun, but the way in which you are going to have fun is by scaring yourself a
right,
little bit,
yes.
you know, like just a little bit. It's like the, yeah. So I remember, you know, going up the hill, like sitting down in it and being like, okay, I'm just sitting here right now. It's okay. 'Cause I'm just sitting here and maybe we'll sit here forever. You know,
like, right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe like, it just won't move. Right. And then it like starts moving. You're like, Oh my gosh. Like it's happening. And then you know, anyone who's been on a roller coaster ever knows like the climb up the hill and it's like, it takes forever, especially like when you're like nervous.
Yes.
Yeah. But nonetheless, you are moving upward. And it's like the whole time, if you've never done it before, all you're thinking about is like, oh, maybe you just want to get to the top of the hill. Maybe we just won't. And then I remember, yeah, we got to the top and I was like, it does this. There's this like little, tiny little like coast, little glide it does into a corner. And then you go down like the first big drop, which is just like a big V. It goes straight down, then straight back up. And I remember thinking like, as we were going down that hill, like I have to get off. I can't do it. I'm going to have to get off. Like, someone tell someone, you know, and it's like, and then it's happening. And I remember going down and coming up the crest of the next hill. And like, yeah, it was the exact same thing you just described. It was like, I was a transformed person.
Yes.
You know, like I came up the other side of the hill, was like, that was the best. You know, like I remember screaming that, like, at, you know, as it's happening. Then we went through the loop and it was like, oh, that was awesome. You know, I was like, but like, and it was so much fun. And I have loved roller coasters ever since, you know, but like, you know, going into it, I was totally terrified.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you just have to do it to know. And so it's like, part of me knows that's like there. It's like, if we just get on the ride and you can experience it, you will see, you know. But then there's that like fear that like you're going to force someone to do it. And just the act of being forced to do it will like ruin it for them, even if they're having fun.
Yeah,
sort of thing. And it's like, it is nerve-wracking,
right?
Like, in that way
you lose that like lack of sense of control, like when somebody else is sort of like making this situation happen to you.
Yeah.
But like, so much as a kid, I found that like I felt like I always broke through those barriers when I was like on vacation with a friend's family.
Yeah.
Because it's like, sorry, Mom, if you're listening. The unfortunate reality was that like I would probably have been much more inclined to like throw a temper tantrum to Mom.
Oh, exactly. Yes.
You know, because it was like, well, like you've seen me at my worst. And therefore, I can show you more of my worst.
This is, yeah.
Because you've already seen it. But, like, I'm not about to let John's mom and dad know, you know, Dave can't know I'm scared.
Oh, much like, less, yeah, it's like, much less, you know, your friend's parents. You don't want your friends to think you're, like,
also,
afraid, you
also
know?
True,
like,
yeah.
They're excited to go on. You're not going to be the kid who didn't do it,
or,
you know?
Or maybe you think they're excited to go on. Maybe they're also just, like, shaking in their boots.
Right.
And like, both of you are doing this, like, game of chicken as to, like, you scared? You scared? I'm not scared. You scared? You scared?
Yeah, I'm not scared, man. We're doing it. Let's go. We're going to do this. It's going to be amazing.
Though, I'm super scared.
Yeah, I can't feel my legs. It's fine.
I'm trembling.
No, you were absolutely right about this. Like, I remember a couple years ago, I got Beth like a mountain bike for Christmas because we'd been doing so much mountain biking recently and it was super fun. And she'd like wanted to maybe like go on some like easy rides and stuff. And our dad offered to like take her and our youngest brother, Tyler, out on like a mountain bike ride.
Yes.
And I was like, this is going to be perfect. This is exactly the situation I want because like it is just like a third party and two people who have very little experience doing the thing. They'll go as slow as needed. Dad is a very good teacher on this kind of thing. And it was like, okay, this is great. But then like somehow over the course of the week, it turned into this like 14 person trip. And I was like, well, I'm excited because now I get to go bike riding. But at the same time, like, I know this isn't going to be as good for Beth because it's the same thing. Like when Beth is around me, she can be like, you know, she can, you know, she has someone to complain to.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah.
It's whereas like yeah.
Like, whereas, you have to love me even if I don't do this.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Whereas just like, if I'm not there, it's like, you're just going to knuckle down and do it because you have to.
Yes.
Right. Like I am making it worse, even though you'd think me being there would be helpful.
Yes.
So I'm like, almost, maybe I should send Luke on the rides with like you or something.
Oh,
you know,
that would
like,
be interesting.
Just be like, yeah, just be like, okay, you know what? How about just you and Uncle Ben go on a ride? Like I won't even be there. Cause maybe I don't think he's not going to freak out to you. Or if he does, then, you know, good luck.
No big deal.
No big deal.
Like, it'll
at
be
least
fine.
I wasn't there.
Yeah. No, I think you're exactly right, though, with the trip that Beth went on, because Alice ended up going on this exact same trip. But I think that what happened was the exact thing that we're describing is like people like subconsciously all are like all want this, like the low pressure situation where they can go and feel comfortable and know that it'll be at a slow pace. And so I almost think what Dad and Tyler and Beth had created was like this window of opportunity for people who felt new to the like activity to all get to know that they could go and feel comfortable,
right?
Being just like learning,
yeah,
you know, like we will go as slow as, you know. And so all of a sudden, like what they had created was like a highly desirable and coveted group to be a part of,
right?
And so everyone at that point was like, well, I want to try it.
Do you that. Know? It sounds like a great way to go slow.
Yeah. Mom and Alice and our friends and like, you know, everybody's out there like trying to figure out how to go, you know, mountain biking for the first time. So I don't know. It was really cool. They all went out. They all did it. So yeah. That was great.
They came back again, you know.
Yeah. So it's not over. That's great.
It's not over.
Okay. So here's a question I have for you, though. Because I was having a conversation similar, like related to beer. We're coming up on, there's the commonly known Valentine's Day and the otherwise much more important Eastern Van Pavia Day.
Oh, Eastern Van Pavia Day. Pop's favorite holiday.
Of course. Where around this particular time of year, while it is like a very like romantical time, and you would think it's a great time for like the latest rom-com to drop, it actually feels like it is frequently the time for the latest horror movie to drop.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I think that the general idea around Valentine's Day is that you might go to the movies on like, you know, like a fun date night type of thing. And what better thing to do on your fun romantic date than to go and be terrified?
Right.
I guess this is something that people enjoy doing together as like a like, haha, we did it.
It almost makes sense because this is like a thing they like implore on The Bachelor a lot.
Okay.
On the TV show where it's like, you know, you have this like short amount of time to like really fall in love with someone, but like there's this like phenomenon where upon like surviving something dangerous with another person like forms a bond with you. So even if you just go to like a scary movie, it's like it's not actually dangerous, of course.
Right.
But like the perception was that like you're in danger, you were scared, so you survived that horror together. But they do it like, you know, with like skydiving or high ropes courses or, you know, cliff jumping or something like that on the show. But like, it's like amazing to me how much it works.
Yes. It's absolutely incredible. But so here is the interesting thing to me, because like, I would say that like horror movies and roller coasters feel like, while they're like very different in concept, they feel like the end result is supposed to be the same. And I think for people who love horror, that is what they glean from it.
Yeah, you're right.
Is like you finish the movie and then it's like, it's almost like getting off the roller coaster and you're like, I lived. Yes, I made it. But the thing about the roller coaster is you walk away from it and it's over there.
Yeah.
And if anything, there's a huge line to get back on it again. So it's like you have successfully done it. You got to enjoy the experience and now it is like physically and geographically behind you.
Right.
And so like the difference for me when I think about horror movies is that like, I have the problem that like if I go and watch them, I don't get to walk away from them.
Yeah, that lives like in your mind rent free for the rest of your life.
For the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I remember, I think the first like true horror movie I saw in earnest was The Ring.
I think maybe theaters, me too.
Which, by the way, is like a scary movie.
Yes. Absolutely.
Like not a good first horror movie, I don't think. I feel like The Ring in particular like invented this whole genre of horror when like no one really ever got it quite as right as they did.
Sure.
Or maybe it was just my lack of exposure to other horror movies. People were like, that you were like afraid of that. I'm like, well, you know what? It stuck with me. I still remember there's like it on the tape itself or whatever. There's a scene where someone like pushes their fingernail through like through a nail. And it's like, I can picture it right now.
It's like, yeah,
it's like I just saw it.
Saw this in like, you know, eighth grade. Yeah. Still here.
It is. I hate that image and it's still there. Anyway, you're welcome for that. but you're right. That is the difference. Actually, this could bring me to my wick of the peak, Ben.
Okay. Lay it on me.
I will. Okay. So my Wick of the Peak, I'm going to have two this week, if that's fine with you. But HBO has recently started a brand new, like, Sunday night, their next big Game of Thrones style show. Like, everyone drop what you're doing. It's time to watch this thing, and you're not going to have the spoilers or whatever.
It makes me happy that there is still, like, I love being able to sit down and binge something. It does make me happy that there is still an effort being made for the episodic release.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
But anyway, yes. Yeah, so I know that there is a new one.
Yeah. The show was called The Last of Us.
Yes.
Which is based on a video game, which I think is like over a decade old. There's probably like a bunch of sequels and stuff by now. But it is, you know, it's like a zombie show.
Yeah.
More or less. I don't know if you would necessarily call them zombies, but it's as if it's like fungi. It's like there's a certain kind of actual fungi that like will like grow on ants and like take over control of their brain and like make them do stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds not real.
Yeah.
When you hear about it, but there are like plenty of documentaries just like covering this fungus in particular.
Yeah.
And it's like that's a real thing.
That's a real thing.
Of course it's a fungus too. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's like, it feels like there could be like anything else, but like a fungus, and like funguses themselves are kind of like, eerie.
Yeah,
and
they're
otherworldly,
like gross looking. Like,
they almost seem like the inspiration for many like other planet alien habitats. It's like, well, let's start with fungus.
Yeah.
And then we'll like incorporate some other stuff.
And then
from there.
We'll go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the big. So the thing about that particular kind of fungi or whatever is that it like can't survive over like 94 degrees or something.
Sure.
So like humans are like, you know, we're like 98 degrees. So like we're at no risk of being infected. But the whole premise of the show was, what if you were able to be infected by this? And this is, of course, what happens to the whole planet or whatever. But man, oh man. So it's only two episodes in as we're recording this. And me and Beth have watched both of them. And I guess, like, you know, you're capable of knowing the whole story if you've played the games or whatever.
Sure.
But, like, man, I'll tell you what. I haven't played the games. And it is, like, just such a good show so far. It's got, like, Pedro Pascal, who's, of course, like, Mando.
Yeah.
And as ever, he's just transporting small human somewhere else. And it's just like, you're just like, way to just steal Mando to do the same thing.
Right. You have one job.
You have one job. And I know you're really good at it. And you wouldn't let anything happen to that little girl.
If she ends up like having like a small steel ball.
Yeah, right.
You know, it'd be like, wow.
Wow. That'd be amazing. Anyway, so last night, the second episode's out, like, Beth is literally sitting on the couch with, like, her hands in front of her face, like, watching through her fingers. Like, you know, it does a really good job at building a lot of tension. And I was like, I was, like, on the edge of my seat the whole time, too, because, like, you know, you're, like, jump scare incoming, like, where is it going to happen? What's it going to be? And, like, man, the zombies are, I mean, zombies, quote unquote, are, like, they are creep-tacular. You know, they are also, like, absolute works of art. They've got these, like, crazy like fungus head explosion looking things, and
whoa,
yeah, there it's I would say give it a shot, even if you're not like, even if you're not into zombies, even if you're not into horror, I think you'll still like it because it's just very engaging.
Yeah, well, have you ever watched any of like The Walking Dead before?
I watched like the first season.
Okay.
Yeah, and it never really hooked me the way I wanted it to, because I know so many people were like so into it, and there was like, you know, when Beth ran her first half marathon ever, it was at Virginia Beach for the Shamrock Rock and Roll. That's what it is.
Nice.
Half marathon. And the group she was running it, doing it with was like 30 or something people running. And like they all booked this like massive, massive beach house, and the like people brought their spouses and significant others. And so there was like 50 people all in this one house.
Wow.
It was a really cool experience. It was like there were so many people there and whatever. It was really cool. But they had this big theater room in the house. And on the first night we were there, Walking Dead was coming on. And it was like the whole theater room was just like packed with,
oh,
like,
that would,
you know,
have been so cool.
It
though.
Was, yeah, like we did, you know, we weren't watching, so we actually weren't a part of like watching the show that night. But yeah, there was probably like 20 to 30 people in there watching it, and then not just the show, but then like the like what was like the after show called, like
I know what you're talking about. Now I can't think of it either, but I know that there is like a famous like Walking Dead.
Yeah, there was like a Walking Dead after show, and like it was as long as the show, and it would come on after it, and like not a single person left. It was like, this is part of watching the show. You watch the show, then you watch an hour of people talking about the show.
Right.
It's like people were just super into it. And I was like, I wish I was that into it. It just didn't quite capture me in that way. But well,
yeah. So it did get me for like a long time. I don't know if I got to like six seasons in or something that, but I watched like a fair bit of the show. But what I had ultimately found, and like, maybe this is like the eventual problem with a zombie based show, is that, that like at some point it's hard to really have the premise be anything other than successfully finding sanctuary, hard stop. So it's like, you know, you get to a place where they've built big enough walls, there's strong enough defenses, enough clearance protocols, all the rest. It's like from here on out, we're safe. The zombies are still out there, but like within these walls, we're safe. But
from
the zombies, yeah. Not each other. But pretty much what always seemed to happen in The Walking Dead was, it was like, okay, we're on the run, we're on the loose, we have to find a way to get safe. Hey, here's someone who's found a way to get safe. Let's go live with them for a while. Someone got infected and now this place isn't safe anymore. Time to be on the run again. Okay, cool. Now we found someplace safe. Now that we're here, somebody got infected and now it's not safe again. So now we're on the run, and it's just like, you know, it was like this like rinse and repeat process of like, it's like, okay, okay. Like I do see the problem, because like as long as the zombies are going to continuously grow to be a problem, and like obviously the further in the timeline and like this like infectious spread is happening, more and more and more people have ultimately been infected, which means that more and more and more areas are dangerous, which means there's fewer and fewer and fewer places. And so it's like I get it, but it's also like there's nowhere to go.
Yeah,
you know, like this is the story. Like either everyone's gonna not make it, or we're gonna finally make it somewhere safe and like live out the rest of our days or whatever. My forever Walking Dead theory was that essentially what was happening was that Rick, who's the main character,
yeah,
was just going to live long enough, but slowly become so deranged through his process of like watching all of the like these people who he's surviving with slowly, you know, become the Walking Dead, become zombies, that by the end of it, he was going to be like in like not even like discernible from the zombies. Like,
right.
Like he maybe hasn't even been infected. He's like the like, what is the term, like the perpetual survivor or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he will always make it through all of the obstacles, and that is just who Rick is and what he is capable of. But like at some point there's nothing left. There's no humanity left inside of him.
Right. I think I always loved the title Walking Dead, because I think spoilers or whatever, I want to say like the season one finale, like they find some like research center or something where there's this guy who's like just, you know, I guess working on a cure or something.
Right.
But like, he takes other blood samples and he reveals like right away that like the entire main cast is like actually infected or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And like, so it's like, then the title takes on this new meaning. It's like, you're all already like Walking Dead. Like,
right.
You're
right.
Effectively, you all have clocks on you, or else you're all sort of immune or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, you're all, it's just, it doesn't really matter. You're all actually going to be there. You are the Walking Dead as well, as much as the zombies are.
Right. Right.
And I always thought that was a very clever play on the title, and it seemed like the thing that seemed to like was, because I remember you watching it, and I would come in like from every now and then, it'd be like, oh, what weird terrible community have they stumbled into now? It's like, oh, this nice town, no, and they're organizing zombie fights, okay, cool. Oh, this base, they have water and they're cannibals, okay, got it, right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. So I mean, I guess that they found like some spins and stuff. So
yeah,
my big curiosity with this new show will ultimately sort of be like, you know, I mean, there's absolutely room, like, you know, in everything. I've even thought about this a lot with like the MCU lately, where like the stories are trying to be so like specific and unique and stuff. And I think everybody was kind of like tired of like origin stories and like the classic like superhero finds out that he has a villain who has the same power. They ultimately have to like duke it out. And, you know, our guy's a little bit of an underdog, but has all the courage of an overdog, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, I almost feel like a lot of the MCU stories have gotten like, they're like, well, no, we can't keep telling the same like tried and true thing. We have to mix it up. And it's like, I almost think they're like losing people in the process, because it's like, turns out those stories, as tired of them as we were, they kind of work.
Right.
And maybe these new stories, it's like, they're more original, but like maybe harder to follow, maybe less like broad spectrum, you know, in nature. And so there's one conclusion could potentially just be like, man, maybe we just have too much of a good thing. Like,
yeah.
We've just reached that point.
I'm super interesting on that note about Quantumania, because like the whole thing is that it seems like it's mostly taking place in like the quantum realm.
Yes.
Right. The new Ant-Man movie coming out. And like Ant-Man's whole power is that he just gets tiny, but effectively they're shrinking down to the point where they're in the quantum realm to begin with. So it's like, you're already shrunk. So like, do you even have powers down here? You know, like, can you continue to get smaller? Could you get like just a smidge bigger or something? Like, or are you effectively just like, now I'm just Scott Lang, regular person who's already tiny in a world where everyone's tiny?
Yeah.
You know, and it, like, obviously Kang isn't going to have the same power set he's going to have. So
I'm
curious how that's going to work. I think they'll probably be able to still shrink and stuff, but I'm curious about that.
Right. I guess at that point in time, it's like relativity. It's like, we are smaller than the size of atoms.
Yeah.
And it's like, but we can be a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
even in that realm.
Even in that realm. So there's that. Yeah. But so The Last of Us, I think already where it is like in a better position than The Walking Dead, or what has captured me about it earlier, is that like in The Walking Dead, like, I think when I went into it, it's like zombies. Zombies are the main enemy. And it's sort of like, zombies are like the main problem. And like, they're everywhere. And they show up once an episode for Rick to blow someone's head off.
Right.
You know, but at the end of the day, it's like the other people are the real problems.
Sure.
You know, and that's sort of like, I guess it's like all these different, you know, looks at humanity and the communities that might form in this sort of situation. And I would say...
Right, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I would say... The Last of Us is more upfront about this particular thing. It's just like, yeah. The zombies are here. They are definitely the reason for the thing. And we're going to keep, they're going to keep showing up for sure. But like, really, right away, you're just like, yeah, the other people are the problem.
Okay.
It's like, very established that like, yeah, this is going to be a show about how people deal with each other in the face of this other problem.
Right.
Like, it's not like we're out there trying to fight a war against the zombies or whatever. It's like, yeah, they're there and they're going to be a problem no matter what. But I would say like that tiny little perspective shift, like on the onset, feels like a big, like it has made me more engaged.
Okay. So here's a question for you that I think potentially be interesting as it pertains to this topic is like, I think that like, right as the pandemic was firing up, there was a movie that came out that was effectively about a pandemic. And it had to do, like, it was so accurate as to, I wish I could think of what the name of the movie was now. I remember this was like a big, people were like, this is odd. Because like
yeah.
they almost guessed everything exactly correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So like when it comes to situations like this, like a zombie movie or a zombie show, for example, it's like you sort of on the cusp of it, just sort of think of this as like, oh, this is like pure fiction. Like this is just like, you know, it's meant to be like whimsical and fun and entertaining and all of the rest. And zombies kind of make for like a good, like sort of like stormtrooper type of like villain because, you know, they do feel like these like, mindless,
it's the endless horde. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, or yeah, exactly. So it's like, there's a little bit like less like empathy versus like a wartime film where it's like, you have to remember like, you know, the reality of the situation that's unfolding before you and the darkness attached to that. But like, it almost makes me wonder with the pandemic is like, how close as like creative writers and stuff like that are we to actually predicting how things would go down?
Man, I have no idea. I have no idea. It feels like it hopefully not. Right? Yeah.
The hopeful answer is like, no, we're way off.
We're way off.
We would all just, you know, like
people would come together, you know?
Right, right.
This is how it would be. It wouldn't be, yeah. This is always an interesting thing. I've noticed in like people's depiction of the future over time.
Okay.
Right. Like, so when we were growing up, anytime you saw in movies, like depictions of the future, like think like Back to the Future or something like that.
Okay.
You go to the future and almost all of the time, it's this like, fantastical place where like technology is advanced and it's like more utopian or like everything is like robots or things are flying around or,
right,
you know, people are eating pills for meals or everyone's wearing like matching silver jumpsuits or whatever. Uh-huh. But never is it like a dystopian future.
Sure.
Right? Like it is the future is positive. The future is going to be great. Things are advancing.
Right.
Things are only getting cooler. Whereas in today's world, all futures are dystopian. And it's like, it is so interesting to me that like over time, like
our optimism shifted.
It's like the way in which people think about the future in an entertaining way has like shifted vastly.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think like this is, we've sort of touched on this topic before, I feel like, but it's like, it's an interesting, arc. So like a lot of times I like to think about things from like the perspective of the year, like 10,000 or something like that. Like we are, you know, in terms of, or like, even if you want to think about like other planets in the world that have gone through like rises and falls of civilizations and technology and advancements and all of the rest of everything and all the rest, like we're still right on the edge. Like it is not very long at all that we have had like modern technology. It's like,
right.
it's like a blip, like not even like generations, plural. It's like,
yeah,
like largely one generation has seen most of it.
Right.
Which means for most of human civilization, they haven't seen most of it, you know?
I mean, like when we were kids, there was an internet.
Yes, exactly. You know? Yeah. weird. But so I think a lot of times, yeah, it's like probably on some level, you know, like Back to the Future and stuff like that may have been coming out like while technology was still like exclusively a good thing every single time we made some type of new advancement. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it seems like on some level we may have reached a point where it's like some of that has to be like potentially in question. And then there's also just sort of the overall impact of the technology itself on, you know, otherwise like the planet, you know,
right.
And now there's like some like environmental, you know, concerns and stuff like that that have come into play to where it's like, maybe all of a sudden it's like, okay, we've done all this stuff. We've made all these amazing things. And it's like, despite the fact that we've made all these amazing things, like maybe there's that potential dark cloud associated with it, which is like the, like, what are the impacts of those things? Like we have now caught up with like that stage of the process. But, and I know that sounds like bleak, but like the thing about it is that like, I also feel like there is the, it almost feels inevitable to me. Like I would be willing to bet like that, like, you know, it, let's say there's millions of alien races out there, whatever. I'd be willing to bet that like an anthropologist could go into each of these planets and like watch through their histories very similar things happen.
Yes. I definitely think you're right. Like, I bet you're right. If, imagine you have, a 100 different planets who all have like intelligent species who like go through, you know, all the Stone Age and technology and stuff like that.
Right.
Or their versions of it or whatever. I bet every single time you would see this trend in fiction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You would always say, like, this is, you can see for a while, these people made a lot of very, like, utopian versions of the future, and then slowly they shifted to this dystopian version of the future, and then this, you know, and we don't know what happens next, but, like, I bet you would always see this trend.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because even, like, if I wanted to, like, bring this in less incredibly universally speaking and more just individualistically speaking.
Yeah.
Hopefully I got that out right. I know that I will have this problem all the time when it comes to like my own expectations for like my short-term futures.
Uh-huh.
Like I tend to, on the whole, think of like my like distant future as like I'm not that like worried or concerned that it will go like astray. And I feel like pretty fixed about like hopefully where it could go and my expectations for myself and stuff. But, I absolutely know that I also have this a lacking amount of data points when it comes to my expectations for the short-term future. So let me try to back it up and consolidate it into more digestible words. Basically, if I've had like maybe 2 bad weeks in a row, my expectation is that like, well, it's all downhill from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're on a downward trajectory. It's been 2 bad weeks and I can't see it ever picking back up again.
Right.
You know, and then similarly, you know, it could be the case where it's like everything's going like amazing, you know, for a span of 2 weeks. And I'll be like, we are untouchable.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like nothing can, like we can do anything.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm invincible.
That's basically the way it is now. And I think for most of my life, that my optimism and pessimism have exclusively been at the steering wheel in their own respective turns,
mm-hmm.
to where it's like everything's going great and it's like nothing but optimism. Everything's going down, nothing but pessimism.
Your brain has a very like zoomed in view of time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so I think that like you and I were talking about this a little bit this morning because we were talking about like you getting ready for the Pokemon regionals that you have on, like in
a week from tomorrow as this releases.
Not February. Yeah. So your birthday. Right?
On my birthday, February 4th. That's right. Woo-hoo, happy birthday to me.
Happy birthday to Jay.
Hopefully what I get for my birthday is, you know, at least 6 wins on day one.
Yeah. I think that'll probably happen.
That's what you need. You need 6 wins to get 18 points to make it to day 2.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So everybody's with us. We know we know where the stakes are now.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So you'll be live tweeting 1 win in the bag.
I mean, that is the trend. Yeah. It's always funny when there's a Pokemon regional happening because my whole Twitter feed just turns into like people updating about their progress everywhere.
Oh,
and
that's
stuff.
Cool.
It is very fun. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Anyway.
But anyway, so yeah, over the past couple of months, I know that you've experimented a ton with like varying like deck styles and strategies and like, you know, different approaches within the meta, which is like, you know, the current like, you know, ever evolving, like, almost semi-organic nature of the game itself.
Yeah, I mean, it changes all the time.
Right. And I feel like through that, you've done a huge amount of experimentation where you've like, you've been like, okay, like let's get silly with it. Like, you know, I was brainstorming all day and I found a way to use this unusual card set that it doesn't seem like anybody else is using. Let's see how that goes. And like, I think you've been met with like wins and losses on both fronts. But I also feel like it's like, you're on like an upward trajectory, even if after each week you've had like a loss at like the local tournament or something.
Right.
You know, and it's like you're constantly upward trending, mm-hmm. even if at any given point in time you've had like a recent like.
Yeah, like a setback or
a
something.
A setback, yeah. And we actually drew it like on our whiteboard this morning. I think, is it Adam Grant from Think Again?
Grant, who wrote the book Think Again. Yeah, and who is a great follow on Twitter and or Instagram.
Yeah, lots of good kind of like modern day philosophical thoughts.
Yeah, workplace positivity and sort of stuff, things like that. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But the important thing to remember is that like even while you're on that like upward trend, it's like even if you've got like what feels like a down, it's like if you compare it to like a year ago, it's like you are still significantly further along than you were a year ago, even if you're lower than you were a week ago.
Right.
And that's the important thing to remember. To like, don't let this down day cloud how far you've come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it can be very hard to remember that in the moment. But yeah, so I am. Yeah, we're looking ahead at the Pokemon regional here, and I have been swirling for like the last month. I'm like, what am I gonna play? I don't know. Like, there has been one very obvious deck for like almost a month and a half now that has just like, you know, been clearly defined as the best deck.
Okay,
and that's Lugia if you're like a Pokemon fan, and it's like, I've played it a few times and I've thought like, man, this is just boring. It's like almost like it's not, I don't know. Like, I didn't really enjoy it that much, or maybe I'm just like playing it wrong, or there's, I don't know. But like every time there's like a defined best deck, it's always like, well, I need to come up with the counter to that deck and that'll be fun.
Right.
And then sometimes it's like, well, the counter. Yeah. It's like the counter is good, but only if you're against that deck. And then if someone brought something else, then maybe you're a little bit screwed. So it's this is this constant balancing act. And yeah, I've been trying out all sorts of stuff here and there. But the other important thing to me about the game is that like to like, oh, like don't ever just let it stop being fun.
Yeah.
So it's like there are definitely weeks when I will go to like a tournament and I'll be like, I'm just trying this meme deck this week, you know?
Right.
Like, hey, you know what? It has one combo, and if you're pulling it off, it's hilarious and it's gonna ruin your opponent's day.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it gonna win everything? Probably not. But there's a chance if you play it, it's not like it can't do what it's gonna do. You know, it's maybe not the best way you could be playing this day, but it is a lot of fun and people are not going to be expecting it. And when the wins you get are going to be that much better for it.
Yes.
So like, it's always fun sometimes to just do that. It's like, I'm probably not going to win the whole thing, but I will have a lot of fun today. I've done that a few times. But yeah, this past weekend, our buddy Big Steve, was playing a deck and, you know, me and him were talking about it afterwards. And we were both sort of zeroing in, like, I think this is what we're going to play. So, I went home and I like put it all together, and it's like it is a Lugia variant, but like I went online, I had like, I played like, I think 11 games with it yesterday and I won like 9 of them. So I was like, okay, this feels like, I don't know what changed, but all of a sudden this feels really good.
Yeah. Well that's, I feel like what I've been trying to say. Yeah. Is I almost feel like what you've been doing is this like very like Mr. Miyagi approach to learning the game, where it's like you're sort of like going over here and you're painting a fence and not realizing that like what you're doing is learning how to like block punches,
right? Yeah.
You know, and it's like instead, like what you've done is you went over here, you experimented with this like thing and you like learned a kind of like play style that's like a little unorthodox, but it's like that is now like an ingredient that is now adding to your overall style of gameplay,
right?
Which I think is really good too, because I think like what you're doing is even at the core of like being competitive at this thing. We've literally like, I mean, to me, this is like the culmination of like, I'm pretty sure when we were kids, it was when you were 11, you and I both had like the same surgery on our chest.
Yeah. The pectus. Yeah.
Yeah. The pectus surgery where we had like a metal bar inserted in our chest to kind of like push our rib cage out a little bit. And I'm pretty sure my recollection is that while you were in the hospital is when we got our first packs of Pokemon cards, or you got like a starter deck.
Okay.
That is always the day that like I can go back to. It's possible you were already into it, but like that is where I remember
getting, you getting your first cards.
Seeing them, and even I think you like gave me like a Squirtle.
Okay.
You know, and it was, man, like,
I have no recollection of that.
Yeah, it was, and it was, so, you know, like, as like I can like picture, you know, the original base set Squirtle in my head. For so long, you know, like we collected, we attempted to play a little bit as kids, and we had like the playmat and stuff like that, and like all the like little damage counters and whatever. And then, like, you know, it sort of like obviously drifted into the back burner. And then as you got older a little bit, you were into like Yu-Gi-Oh, and like, you know, you did some competitive stuff there. And it's like now full circle. I feel like we've come all the way to the point like where as adults, we've like gotten really into like collecting and having like a lot of fun just doing like the, like, now I have adult money, which means Right. Now I can do this. And it's like, you know, even that was fun for a while, 'cause it was like, okay, like now we're like getting to, you know, interact with these things in a way that we haven't been able to for so long. But even then, we've now like got you officially in like a sanctioned tournament,
yeah,
like where you are going to actually go and play with like lots of other people.
Right.
I think Steven was telling me that it's like 1400.
If it's 1400, then it's the biggest in North American history.
Okay. Yeah. He told me it was the biggest in North American history.
Okay. Then, so, yeah. Okay. Sure. So big.
Yeah. So it's a really big tournament, and like, we are going and have been planning to go like with intent and purpose for like months now.
Yeah.
And it's like about to happen. And so I don't know, like, you know, I think it's really cool though that like, even though we are taking it more seriously than we have ever taken it ever before.
Yeah.
You are still putting so much energy and effort into like making sure that you're having fun.
Yeah.
With it. Which of course, like with anything, should be like the underlying, you know, function.
Yeah,
behind.
Like, hopefully. Like, yeah. Like I'm not just down here and it's like, oh, I just lost. So like, I feel like, you know, like hopefully you're not down there like, well, I lost a few games and this whole thing was ruined. This was a waste of time, you know?
Right.
Like, you don't want to be like, you don't want to be like that. And it's like, I think there is this healthy thing, like on those Saturdays when you can see when my Twitter feed just like fills up that way. Like you will see some people who like you recognize as like otherwise great players, and they'll be like, yep, went, you know, 3-3 on day one, just decided to drop. And it's just like, you know, sometimes you just have like a bad draw, you know. There's Right. Nothing you can do if the person, if you, you know, play against three people in a row who have built decks specifically built to stop you from doing what you're doing. And it's just like, you know, there's only so much you can do, you know.
Yes, it's well, and it's interesting too, because I feel like with counting cards, for example, like people think of the blackjack is counting cards is Yeah. Usually where it works.
Yes.
Like, I think when people think of the ability to count cards, they think you have now mastered the ability to beat the dealer every single time. And it's like, that is not true. Like, that is not what counting cards is. It's
Right. Not
like you are still at the mercy of the chance. You still have to have enough money to like enter to play the game. You just have you have tilted the odds in your favor, and it is about the only way you can do it in all of gambling.
Right.
Like, it's the only time that you can like beat the house, and it requires a very specific set of skills, a very like focused and intense amount of like, you know, mental training and exercise and all the rest. But it's like I think otherwise the best case scenario you get is like on roulette. There's like the ball can land on like red, black, or green, and there's like one green thing or whatever on the roulette wheel, and everything else is red and black. So it's like the other highest opportunity you have is to go and just put your chips on red or black.
Right. And then that's now you're at coin flip.
Now you're close.
You're
to
close.
Coin.
You're right. 'Cause Yeah. The green makes it, so you're more like at 49.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So like the house is like, nah, we fixed that.
Yeah. It's like, so, you know, you could come and play and play and play and play. And like the statistics will absolutely determine that the house will still win. And so that is all that counting cards will effectively let you do, is take the edge back from the house. But then you still have to play enough games. You have to be smart enough. You have to maintain like the LR, you know, Yeah. Like the force of will, the mental energy to like keep the count alive in your head the whole time. And even have the gumption. Like this is like one of those things, like
and like the charisma, to like not give it away.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Cause they're not gonna, if they recognize it, you are so out.
Yes.
In a dangerous kind of way.
Right. And I can't imagine how like, while it seems like it would be difficult to spot, effectively what you would have is somebody who is sitting there extremely focused at the same table for hours on end who is consistently winning.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? That's not that hard to spot all of a sudden.
Yeah, probably.
Like, you know, it's like, it's probably pretty visible. So anyway, the point is though, like when it comes to the game that you're playing now, the strategic game that you're playing, is that like luck is still involved. Like you still need the right cards to show up. You still need things to go in your favor. You like, you know, you can have the best built deck, and that's where the best players in the game at all will publish their decks. Like you can go and play the exact same stack of cards that the guy who just won the tournament played. And it's like that's not like a mystery. People don't like hide that. They have to register it, right? Like what their card set is.
Well, they have to register it with the tournament, and like the regionals we go to are called closed lists. So you can't, no one can know. Like the your competitors will not know.
Right.
And after the tournament's over, it's not like it does not then become public knowledge.
Okay.
It's not like the tournament then releases all the lists or anything. However, most of the time after people play, they will post like a photo of their full list, like all laid out, like on a table, like on Twitter, like here's what I played.
Right. So the point being effectively though, it's like when it comes to the game itself, you could, this is the premise of like NASCAR racing, right? Like every single person is racing the same car.
Right.
They have different decals, but like the idea of racing against one another in some capacity comes down to like, how well does your like crew run the vehicle? How well do you know its limits? How well do you like balance the ever shifting, like, you know, variations of the race itself once it starts. But otherwise, they're all using, unless I'm wrong, they're all using the same like motor, the same physical body, the same tires, the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they mean by stock car. Like right, it's all the same car.
Yes.
I even remember like we had like some like NASCAR video games as a kid. And like before, you know, it'd be like, here's the track. And you can go in it like just on the video game, you know, fiddle around with like 15 different metrics to be like, oh, do you want to increase, like, do you want to be running like loose or tight? Do you want to increase the wedge? And you're like, what the heck is wedge? You know,
what's
how,
a wedge?
You know, how do you want the handling to be like a little bit, you know, over here, over there? And it's just like, well, I don't know what half these things do. And I'm just moving like a little slider on a, you know, on a video game,
let alone driving a car at
200 miles an hour and, you know, being the one tightening all the actual bolts and stuff around everywhere. Like, yeah, you want this like that? Or you know, do we want to focus more? Cause this track's got more of a lean here. So maybe we should do this there. And it's like, not only do you have to get the car right, then you still have to be the better driver.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's like so much more going on. So yeah, it's also why like, yeah, you can play the same, you know, the person who won the tournament, you could have been playing the exact 60 as them and you're just not playing it as well.
Right. And so that's what I guess it comes down to is like, that's like where the counting cards thing comes into play. It's like, you can be playing the best circumstances and everything, but you still need things to fall, you know, in your favor and tilt the odds towards yourself versus the house.
Exactly.
You know, and probably like that's where, you know, like through, again, if you want to like use like the NASCAR example, it's like that's where like a hyper diligent crew who's all thinking on the same page and is all like approaching things with like a common strategy, it's like, you know, that's probably going to work a lot better than a whole bunch of people who all think that they know the right way to do it and they're all sort of like competing with each other and like whatever, you know, like it could potentially fall apart. So what you're always trying to do is like consistently and favorably increase, you know, like what level of like grab you have, but you can't, I would say it's probably unlikely or impossible to scrape that all the way up to like, you know, a plus 90%.
Yeah. Very unlikely. Yeah. Very unlikely. But you're totally right. I mean, like here locally, you know, if there's, you know, 10 people at a tournament, it's a big deal. I remember one in particular, I was playing a Suicune deck and I was walking around. I had the bye in the first round, which just means you don't play because there's an odd number of people.
Right.
And I remember just walking around for the whole first down. I just like would just like walk behind people and just stared at what they were playing. You know, it's like there's no rules against that or anything. And like, so going into the second round, I knew every other deck there. And I was just like, all right, if I'm against him, this is my game plan. If I'm against him, this is my game plan. If I'm against that person, this is my game plan.
Right.
And like, sure enough, I came up against this one guy and it was like, had I not had the knowledge ahead of time, I would have been like, I would have had to like really think hard in the moment to come up with exactly like, what am I going to do to counter this? But because I knew exactly what he was playing, I had planned out ahead of time, like, okay, the main way to do this is to make sure you do this as fast as possible. And if you do that, you're in a really good position to win. And I did that exact thing. And it was like over like that, you know,
right.
It was like, boom, gotcha.
Yes. But I mean, and like, yeah, like, so that's like learning the game. It's learning like beyond your own deck and knowing like how other people might
yeah.
operate and like what, if they're trying to use something that is effective against what you have, like knowing how to be more effective back.
Yes.
So I don't know. I mean, it's very interesting. It's very exciting. And I am like, I'm so deadly curious because like, you know, we've talked about it a ton on this show. We've talked about it a ton just as brothers, as like being in the same like friend groups and stuff like that. Like I've watched and been at the mercy of your like strategic gameplay for like board games and video games and stuff like that for my mm-hmm. entire life, which is largely the reason I don't like those things because I'm awful at them by
Nonsense.
Comparison. So for me, it's like, it's really cool though to watch this like next tier and see like what it's like against all the other siblings of the world who are also who serve the same role in their siblings' lives as you've served in mine.
Oh man, how exciting. The good news though, that this is going to be like the largest one ever is it's so hard to know like where you fall in the ranks. Like on the one hand, that means like the game is really popular at the moment, and it probably means the number of like more casual players is the number that's more high.
Yes.
So like you're like it, and this is like where it's like in the grand scheme of things, would I be considered a more casual player or not? I don't know.
That's in my part of mind, my curiosity.
if it's a larger pool of casual players, I feel like that favors me a little. That like hopefully the first few rounds then are like moderately easier, but by the time, even in this scenario, like by the time you get to like round four, you'll be against people who've won four rounds, and like all of those people are suddenly just going to be like, yeah, we're back to like good.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So can you explain, cause I know that the bracket styling for this particular piece of competition is called Swiss.
Yeah. Swiss.
So what does that mean?
So that means, so Swiss is preferable for big tournaments like this to like a full on bracket, where if you think of like March Madness, you know, you got these giant 64 man brackets and each team after each round, the losers are all eliminated and you narrow the field down by half.
Right.
Now, the problem is, of course, that if you have, you know, 1,400 people who all came to Orlando, Florida to play in your tournament, if 700 of those people are excluded after one round, that sucks.
Yeah, it's like you're not going to get people to come back and do more of these if they have the opportunity to play one round. After, like...
No good.
Because that's the thing. I mean, like, and this is what we've learned about this entire endeavor, is that it may come across as like, you know, like Pokemon, like trading card game. Like I had those as kids and stuff, but it's like the process of getting there and, you know, having a place to stay and feeding yourself and like flights and like all the rest. Yeah. I mean, it's no small feat getting there. So So you don't want to be eliminated after one round. So they fix that.
So you have Swiss, which means everyone there, especially on day one, will play, depending on the number of people there, 9 rounds. Like no matter what, you'll get to play 9 games or whatever. And then, I think each win gets you like 3 points, a tie gets you 1, and like a loss gets you 0.
Okay.
Or whatever. And I think you typically need like 18 points to get to day 2. So it's possible you get to a certain point in the day where it's like, well, it's impossible for me to get 18 points now, even if I went out. So I'm just going to like bounce, you know, there's no point to play out the rest of this or whatever.
Sure.
That means, yeah, so you get to play 9 rounds, and then whoever has the appropriate or the highest, point total, will qualify for day 2. Then there's like another, depending on the number of people, like 4 to 5 rounds of Swiss again.
Okay.
And then from there, the people with the highest point total then get put into like a top like 8 or top 16 actual bracket. And then it is, you know, win or go home.
Okay. Okay. And that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense too, because the other thing that I've considered before is like, what happens if you go and sit down? And I know for you, this would probably just be a special experience anyway, but like the reigning champ or whatever, you know, someone who's like known to win multiple of these regionals. It's like, that was like one of those things. It's like, what happens if you're just like somewhat unlucky, so to speak, and you sit down in your first round and you're facing like the guy who might, or the girl who might win the whole entire shebang.
It could happen.
You know, and it's like, well, that was... that wasn't great.
Yeah, right? Like, you know? someone has to play Yugi in round one, Ben, you know?
Yeah, exactly. right. Yeah, so it's like, well, that was good to start with a nice loss. Yeah. But so it's good to know, because, you know, sometimes that happens too, like with like playoff pictures or whatever. It's like, or even like the way that, like, you know, the NFL does sports, for example. There's the AFC and the NFC, and they're these two separate divisions. And the Super Bowl is basically the battle between the winner of both divisions. But when it also comes down to it, like, the AFC championship game might literally be the two best teams in the league playing each other for then who gets to go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
It also reminds me of the very famous Miracle on Ice, where the United States played against the USSR in 1980 in the Olympics. It's like, that, what, like, it's a very, very famous game because, like, Russia was just like
unstoppable.
Like, they won every year. They won every game with, like, a commanding style. There's, like, the quote, like, if you score on the goalie, keep the puck because it doesn't happen.
Right.
Like, you know, that's like, it's a rare thing to have whatever. And ultimately, when it came down to it, like, they had to play each other before going on to the finals to play Sweden.
Sweden, yeah.
I think. So, you know, they beat Russia, and it's like, that wasn't even for gold.
Right.
You know, like, that was just, I mean, it's the feat. It's like, that is like in the movie, I don't even think they show the game against Sweden at all.
Yeah, they just, like, referencing is like, yeah, my boys went on to win against Sweden in the next round for the gold, coming from behind once again. It was like, yeah, okay, good. Didn't see that match. Like,
yeah, we didn't even see the actual medal game. Just just, you know, the big one was whether or not you could win that first major unstoppable hurdle.
Right. Yeah. And even then, like, there's a way that, like, you know, let's say you go up in the first round and you lose or whatever, and it's to, you know, the effective, you know, reigning champ or whatever.
Right.
Like, you could then go on to, like, win out the rest of the day and be like, oh, look at that. You know, that one loss, not that big a deal. Where then that loss, like, might not hurt you as much. Like, it's probably, if you're going to lose, you may as well lose to someone amazing.
Right.
Because, like, chances are they went on to win the rest of their matches. So in, like, a tiebreaker situation, the fact that you lost to that person will actually, like, you will be weighted higher.
Okay.
Like, because so their record is better.
So there's, like a strength of schedule that comes into play.
There is. Yeah. Okay. So, like, you know, if you lost the first round and then you win out, but the person you lost to went on to, like, lose out, then, like, you, like, oh yeah, your one loss is to someone who has, you know, one win against you and then eight losses. Like,
right.
Yeah, it's like,
what happened?
Yeah, like, they got real lucky against you and then just tanked out, you know. Whereas if you have one loss and then that person goes on to have, you know, 8-0 day or whatever, it's like, yeah, okay, so that person was amazing. So they're pulling you up the chart with them. So it's like, if you lose to someone, weirdly, you're sort of rooting for them
now to go on.
Like, okay, but, like, help me out, you know?
Right, yeah. It's like, I may have lost, but, like, you're great, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Like, you're going to be really good against everyone else, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed we're playing exclusively undefeated people.
Yeah. Well, the longer...
I'm sure that'll go well.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what'll happen, though, like, because it pairs you each round based on record. So, like, if you win the first round, the next round you're definitely going to be playing someone who won the last round.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's another piece of the Swiss method.
Yeah.
So, like, by... If you've been winning all day, by the time you get to... This is interesting, because, like, I know back when I used to play the video game Halo... it's like probably one of the only video games I've ever played online before. But I remember in the early days you would go and basically everybody was kind of equally awful.
Yeah.
You know, like, you'd all, like,
when you're
around
at the bottom of the ladder. Yeah.
Right. Like, it was very unlikely that somebody was going to, like, you know, snipe you just running across the field or something like that. And quite frankly, I typically found that version of play way more fun.
Yeah.
Because it's just sort of everybody scrambling around, not knowing what they're doing. And it's like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, a little bit more like whimsy.
Right.
To
yeah.
It. And then eventually, you know, you get like, you know, 30 rungs up the ladder or whatever. And it's like, okay, I literally can't go anywhere, for fear of the one spot. I know the guy's got the rocket launcher. You go there because that guy's got the sniper rifle.
Yeah, like, exactly. Right. Like, at one point, being better at the game meant you knew where the rocket launcher was and your opponents just don't.
Yes. Yeah.
You've just memorized the map a little bit better, but now it's like, nah, you're out in the open, you're dead.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, no, at this level, nobody misses.
No one misses. Yeah. Everyone's getting headshots. Come on.
That'll be cool, though, like, to sort of, like, see how the day goes and sort of, like, what your slate is like. And I'm excited because we've got, like, both you and Steven who are both going to be competing. meeting. So like it's almost like tracking somebody during a marathon, like throughout the day. It'll be like, how's it going?
Yeah.
Where are we at?
Doing? Yeah. How's Steven doing? You guys good? The way it's going to happen, I almost guarantee you, is that even though there's going to be 1400 people there, it's going to be me against Steven round one.
Oh my gosh. I know.
I'd be so mad. I'd be like, are you kidding me right now?
Like, we should not have had to play each other.
This should not have happened. That would be so frustrating. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Very, very low odds, but I've seen it before.
Well, anyway, lots of really fun stuff on the horizon. I mean, we've obviously got a week at Disney next week, and then the tournament after that. So I'm just completely stoked to see everything that is to come. But I also feel like we're at a great spot for wrapping up this week's episode.
I think so.
Which I think has been a fun one. We've discussed it all. Zombies.
Yeah, right.
Competitive play.
Exactly.
Dystopian futures.
Right.
We got lots of stuff in there. I was going to talk about bubblegum, but I completely forgot. So maybe next week.
And there's always next week. We can talk about bubblegum then.
There you go. If you guys have any feedback for this week's episode, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. I do read all of your emails, even if I don't respond to all of them. I do always very much appreciate your insight as to anything that we had said during today's discussion. It's always fun to see what stuck with people, because I'm sometimes I'm very surprised as to like the things that we bring up that's like that actually gets the email responses. So
right.
Again, popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Otherwise, if you'd like to show some support for the show, we do have a really fun Patreon where we do lots of really cool things. You can have Discord access. We have a bonus show called After the Final Pop, where Jay and I record an extra 15 to 20 minutes each week. And then there's, of course, the exclusive quarterly merch tier at the $25 level, which basically helps us to create merchandise that is fun and unique for the pop viewers. And we can produce the exact correct amount of them so that we're not like producing, you know, so many t-shirts and then not having any of them sell, and then your support's actually just going to the creation of the shirts in the first place. So it's a really good way to kind of get some really cool popcorn culture swag while also supporting the show. All that is available at patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next week,
pop.